How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
We never wanted to impose ourselves on any community to say, okay, here we've come to, you know, save you poor people from your misery and we're going to make your lives better now. That was never us. Rather, what we did was we connected with folks in the Dominican Republic who were very, very familiar with all of these mountain communities.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome, everyone, back to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists, episode number 147. My name is Andrew.
This is Michelle, and thanks for hanging out with us for another week. I am so excited because everyone keeps coming back and saying like how much they're learning, all the things that, you know, the people are, how they're changing their lives, right? And It just, oh, it makes my little heart want to explode. I'm so happy.
Well, and I think that that brings us to our almost weekly review read. It seems like people are really responding back to our reviews on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever. So thank you, everyone, for sending in your comments.
Yes.
I don't think I've read this one yet. This is from November 7th. This is by Stephanie in Texas. Or Stephanie in TX. I assume it's Texas. Anyways. 5 stars. Really amazing. Yes, I say amazing. Having been at one office since graduating 7+ years ago, I value the information Andrew and Michelle bring to me. Currently working through season 1 and so thankful for each topic of conversation. Definitely brought with humor and enthusiasm.
Aw.
Good quote. Thanks, guys. So thank you, Stephanie. This is season 3, so you'll probably not hear
you went back to season 1. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I can't bring myself to do it.
Friend.
Yeah, I can't bring myself to listen to the older podcast. It hurts my heart to hear the
audio.
It's
not that bad. I know, but it's not as bad as we keep thinking it is in our head. So
I think, I think I have made it more awful in my head than it actually is in reality, but still.
Yeah.
But thanks for going that far back.
Yeah, she brings up a good point, though. You know, if you're jumping in right now, this is your first episode, or you've only listened to season 3, go back and listen to some of those older ones. Forgive us for some of the issues we had, but the content is there. The quality of our guests is still there. You'll learn a lot. True. You really love it. So go back and download some of those ones.
Very true. Good point. And we're actually very excited because we are recording this before we head off to Greater New York for the big conference, and we get to see some of our listeners, some of our past guests, which we always just, it makes me so happy to see them.
And I've never been to Greater New York, so this will be a really fun time for us. And of course, we're going to stop by all the booths that we love to see, including Zerk. Zerk, who has been a huge sponsor of this podcast, supporter of this podcast. So we'll be sure to stop by and say thank you to them in person.
For sure. And we want to tell you about this week's deal, which is for the Pink Petal. You've definitely heard us talk about the Pink Petal before. It is a way to kind of fish hook your patient's mouth with the saliva ejector, the slow speed, and make it comfortable and it actually stay in there. I actually used this not last week because I was in Mexico with your lovely wife, but the week before, and I had a Spanish speaking patient and she was able to close on it comfortable. You know, my Spanglish and her Spanglish were just not ideal, but we still managed the suction. You know, it worked, it held in her mouth and she was able to close on it, which I think was easy for me.
Mm-hmm. And I think I wanted to address one of the points that we heard from somebody. It was about the infection control aspect of this. And I think that this is a great adjunct, as Michelle has talked about previously, using it with the op side of things where the assistant can go grab something while the patient's not drowning. Using a high evac suction in addition to this, I think is really key when you're using your ultrasonic. And I think that it will give the patient, everyone complains about drowning, and then you try and use that high evac to like suction way in the back there and you end up getting their cheek or you end up getting their tongue or whatever. Don't play those games anymore, everyone. Like, this is not ergonomically friendly to do those things. Get a peaking pedal, put it on your slow evac, and then your patients will really definitely thank you for that.
Yep, totally agree. So enjoy this promo code, which is TALE10, so TALE10, so that you can get $5 off a 50-pack of the pink pedal from Zerk. So thank you again, Zerk, for your sponsorship.
In this episode that you're about ready to hear, this is finally one of my mission trips. I think that
finally
Michelle's done like 5-1 or something like that. So this is with Somos Amigos, and there's several awesome things that you're about to hear. One is one of our listeners, Adolfo, he wrote in and, or he videoed in and won the contest that we could help have him come with us. And he also had a really good idea of a product to bring with him. It's the Newbird High Evac Suction Mirror Combo. And so you'll hear us talking about how that's utilized a little bit more in the podcast. And then we also are talking with Frank, who is the founder and the director of Somos Amigos, and kind of the things like, how did it get started and where is it located? And we talk about the costs, because costs are always a concern when it comes to mission trips. So I think you guys are going to really like this one. It's a fun one, and I think it's a little bit different.
Yeah. So enjoy our chat with Frank from Somos Amigos and also Andrew's recap on his mission trip to the Dominican Republic.
Hey, Michelle.
Yeah.
It's time for the interview.
Oh, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine.
So for our listeners who are just kind of jumping into this, we have been working with Frank. This is Frank from Somos Amigos, and we have been working with them on getting some dental personnel out to the Dominican Republic on a dental trip. I've been a few times, and we just got back in October, and it was phenomenal yet again.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it, what happens when you bring a group of people together who really have no other purpose than to try to do some good. And like you said, you come back with this, you know, feeling of happiness and like maybe we really did make a difference in some people's lives. It's pretty special.
I think it's a testament also if you look at, you know, so I went in 14 and 15 and then again this year, and it's almost the same crew. I mean, it's the same people that I
really
remember that feels like family.
That's really an amazing thing to me. In fact, I was just working on a letter about an hour ago, and I realized, Andrew, maybe I mentioned this on the trip, but we're about to have our 50th trip of Somos Amigos.
Amazing.
And do you know, and Michelle, there's a volunteer who has been with us 41 times. There's another volunteer who's been with us 38 times. And I could just keep on going down. And I look at those names and I think of those people. And how can you not be inspired, you know, by that kind of selflessness? You know, people just wanting to do something good and taking a week out of their lives at a time, and in some cases multiple times in the year. It's really just inspiring. We couldn't do what we do and be where we are without those incredible volunteers.
Do you think that maybe we could start at the very beginning of the journey of not trip 50, but trip number one?
Yeah, for sure. You know, the organization grew out of a student organization that I started with a colleague back in the late 1980s, actually. And I was working at a high school on the East Coast in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. Wonderful place where I ended up working for 16 years. It was a beautiful high school. It happened to be an all-boys high school. And, you know, you have to imagine this place, you know, sitting on a nine-hole golf course and with beautiful buildings and facilities that would rival a college campus. As much as I loved being there and loved getting to know the young people who were there, a part of me felt like they had no idea the bubble that they were living in. And so with a colleague, I started a service organization. We called it Somos Amigos, which means we are friends. So for basically 6 weeks in the summer between junior and senior year, we would bring the students to the Dominican Republic and do projects that were very much manual labor intensive. For example, building schools, building water systems. One summer we built a road to connect an isolated community. It was really hard work. Of course, I was much younger then, but it was tough work, literally with picks and shovels, and from our perspective, and thinking about this experience that we wanted to provide for the young people, there were a few fundamental principles that were important to us. One is, we never wanted to impose ourselves on any community to say, okay, here we've come to, you know, save you poor people from your misery and we're going to make your lives better now. That was never us. And rather what we did was we connected with folks in the Dominican Republic who were very, very familiar with all of these mountain communities. And we asked the folks there to help us connect with communities who were already organized, who had already identified a need that they had, but that didn't have the means to make happen what they as a community felt that they needed. And so we would be introduced to communities and, be driven in a, old Land Rover to these, really remote places and sit and have meetings with an entire community would show up to meet with us. Yes, we were doing the funding, of course. That was what was going to make it all possible. But we also insisted that we weren't just going to sit back and provide the funding and not do any of the work. And so that's what we did. So, after a few years of doing this, I just kept encountering these situations that were terribly troubling. Specifically people suffering with disease, with pain. It was really, really hard for me to make sense of that. Why is it that, I'll give you some examples. Andrew, you've heard these, but, I still remember the haunting crying of a toddler all through the night. Night after night while we were in this community, just crying and crying. And I couldn't, figure out, why this child was crying, and obviously in some kind of distress. Well, it turns out that he had been bitten by a spider, and the infection was just terrible. An infection that became so bad that, he was in danger of losing his leg. So where are the antibiotics for someone like this? How is it that, folks are so far away from any kind of health care that a little child has to suffer in this way? Another situation that I can tell you about more specifically related to dental care. But this is after the clinic had been around for a number of years. A little boy, 13 years old, living in a really remote community, whose mom had died when he was quite young. He lived alone with his dad, just the two of them. But like in a lot of these little villages, the dad is out most days looking for work, whatever kind of work he can get, working on fields, doing whatever kind of manual labor. And so he'd be gone basically 6 days of the week. And this young boy taking care of himself at home, making his meals and getting himself to the school. Well, this boy, when he finally came to our clinic, had had a tooth that had become so infected. The abscess was so bad that the infection just came through his cheek, and he had a hole coming from the inside of his mouth to the outside, with oozing with pus. And so again, you know, after several years of working in these communities and seeing situations like this that were just so troubling, I started to realize, you know what, even if I look at this group of students who are here doing this work, I know that there are parents, moms and dads, who are healthcare professionals who probably could help deal with some of these situations that we're seeing. And certainly if not among the parents of the students who are here, in the greater school community where I was still working at the time, there were plenty of physicians, plenty of dentists, plenty of hygienists, plenty of nurses who I knew could help some of these folks who were just in a bad place as far as healthcare goes. And so that was really the thinking that led to the first trip whereby it was one physician and one dentist, my own physician and my own dentist.
Wow.
Yeah, finally came down. And with six high school students, we said, let's see what we can do. Now, I also want to just back up and say that at that time, we were working in a community on a water project, basically to bring water to this community. It was a huge project. It ended up being taking place over two summers. But it was in the first summer, as I got to know folks in the community, became quite close with some of them, that, again, the desperation was made very clear. People without access to any kind of quality health care. And I would say that as far as medical care in particular, an even worse situation. For a physician, if you needed medical attention, you could get yourself, you know, an hour away to the local public facility, but still, you would be hard pressed to find any kind of dental care along the way. So in that first summer, started talking to the folks, and that's what really propelled me when we got back to really work hard to bring the physician and the dentist that next summer. So we happened to be in the same community and at the invitation of that community. And I just want to stress that again, because it's never been a part of who we are to impose ourselves on anyone, rather to work with the local community. With the one physician, one dentist, and six high school students and two teachers, we saw patients. And that first trip, now you have to remember, there was no electricity and there was no running water. So what the heck does a dentist do in those kinds of...
Been there, done that.
Have you?
I have.
Well, I mean, it's really tough. And so literally for the dentist, for example, in that first trip, we took a rocking chair. We used actually the chapel for the community. And so for the dentist, we took a rocking chair, we tipped it kind of backwards a little bit and set it up on cement blocks. And that was on the altar in the chapel. For the physician, just to give some modest privacy to the patients, we hung bed sheets with clothespins to try to create a little area that was you know, somewhat private. But the dentist, like I said, all he could do was pull teeth. There was no electricity, no running water. So with a high school student and with a snake light, you know, trying to help the dentist, he would pull teeth. And as we got into it, you know, he said, you know what, we got to, you know, I mean, think about, you know, potential challenges, you know, unexpected situations. We actually put a limit of 4 teeth per patient because we didn't want to have someone bleeding too much, right? And so at the end of the week, we had this nasty bag of pulled teeth that we had to get rid of. And the physician, you know, saw his patients. We had some antibiotics. We really didn't know what to expect, you know, but we came with a few things. But what happened then afterwards, we debriefed among ourselves and with the community. Okay, we've done this now. What can we do next time around? You know, let's say we come back next summer. How can we do it better? You know, and so those kinds of, there are two questions that have really driven our organization from the start is, you know, can we do better? Can we increase the level of care that we offer? And can we take care of more folks? Can we treat more patients? And every step along the way for 22 years now, those questions have guided our thinking with the local community, as I continue to stress. So that's how we started, you know, very modestly. And now, you know, you fast forward all these years and we have 5 buildings. And in fact, the water that the community still gets is still the water system that was built by those high school students all those years ago.
That's pretty fantastic.
Cool. Yeah. But we've got 5 buildings. And if you look at, you know, just think of our dental facility. Gosh, I mean, I'm going to say, I mean, Andrew, you'd know better than I, but, you know, just based on my own going to my dentist today, what we do on the side of a mountain down there is pretty extraordinary. And mm-hmm. and the access to equipment and supplies that our professionals have, our hygienists, our dentists, is really amazing. So now on a, we have 8 stations in our dental clinic. So in a typical group, we love to have 1 or 2 hygienists, and we've got you know, tons of instruments for them. We've got the ultrasonic scalers. We've got, you know, all of that. And for the dentists, we love to have a mix of general dentists. We love to have a pediatric dentist, an endodontist when we can, an oral surgeon when we can, and we even have a denture lab right on site. So it's really extraordinary. We have dental X-ray capabilities and, you know, all kinds of pieces of equipment. I don't even know what it does, but we have it and it gets used. It's really extraordinary where we've come.
It truly is. I mean, very similar, like you said, what you could find in the States at your own office. You're going to come in, you're going to have, someone's going to be triaging you, looking at all the different things, and they're really going to pay attention to your chief complaint. So whether that means, I think we might have mentioned this on when Adolfo and I were talking, but one thing that we learned is the Haitians think that if you get your teeth cleaned, doesn't matter how many cavities you have, because that's going to self-heal. And that's a belief system I'd never heard of before. And so when we're coming into this thing and they say, all I want is a cleaning, there's something also kind of beautiful about being able to give them what they want, but also helping to teach and inform in not mm-hmm. in not a bullying kind of way.
Well, you know, one thing that it took me a while to really be able to reflect on this and then to be able to articulate what I experienced, but I've really gotten to understand how much we take for granted in terms of our own self-awareness on issues related to our health, right? And you know, when you, I mean, I want to be very careful not to talk down about anyone, but, you know, when you have some folks who haven't had access to a proper education and who haven't grown up being connected to the outside world in the same way that we are, the awareness that they have of even some very basic bodily functions and processes, and treating things like disease and dental issues. I mean, it's just a very different place where some of our patients are coming from. And I have to say, though, going back to our volunteers, they're just extraordinary, because I love to say that our volunteers, they meet their patients where they are, and they hold their hands, have a conversation with them, try to connect with them in whatever modest way they can, even with the language barrier. We really want to try to understand them and get to know them, in addition to providing the care that we do. And I think the fact that when we open the clinic, typically more than 80% of our patients have been with us before, and many of them for a long time, I think they experience that.
I think it's says something for groups that go and want to educate without trampling on the beliefs or culture of the country mm-hmm. that they're going to. Because mm-hmm. I do think that has been, I say mission, quote unquote, like there's been some that have ruined some places because they don't meet them where they're at. You know, I've been in countries where they believe the moon gods would come and take their babies, and these babies were dying of SIDS, or, I don't think it's called mm-hmm. SIDS now, but, these sudden, like, infant things where they were all bundled up and hot and all these things, and just not telling them that there's no such thing as a moon god, but just making sure that they know how to care for their baby and things, just simple things like that. But I think it's so important not to trample on their beliefs when you come and try to treat them.
Yeah, you have to ask yourself, in the end, who is it really who's being served? Our volunteers come back home with, as we were saying at the very start, feeling great about what they've just done, and, on this high, like they've really done something special, and they have, But our organization has never been, it's not like we get to the airport and give each other a high five and say, okay, that's it. We'll see you somewhere else next year. We've established ourselves in this community. We're there now quarterly. Every 3 months, we're there with another group of people, and it's been 22 years. We've always thought about the long term, respecting, like you say, Michelle, respecting the culture, respecting their beliefs, but also trying to introduce really quality and reliable healthcare to this entire region now.
In dentistry, over the last, it's been a big push the last several years specifically, but we're really talking about the oral systemic link and how medicine and dental, the two groups, the two professions need to really come together to kind of help give this complete treatment to the patients. And for me, that's one of the big things about Somos Amigos is there's that communication between the providers up in the front, up in the medical section, the providers back in the dental section. We've had that every trip that I've ever had. There has been at least one or two cases where we've had to have those discussions. Can you talk a little bit more about the medical side and what services are offered and maybe some of the key players that are kind of helping out there?
Sure. I mean, it's primary care. We don't have facilities to have patients stay overnight with us. And we don't do, apart from the oral surgery that we do in the dental clinic, we don't really do any surgeries, although we have started to do some more minor procedures. But really, it's primary care and everything that means. We have a lot of patients with chronic conditions that we provide their medications, we maintain them. Just this summer, in fact, we're very proud to have started a new program whereby we're delivering insulin to diabetic patients who live in really remote communities. It was hard for us to find literally anywhere in the world an effective model. How do you do that? How do you, if you know, if you have a diabetic patient and he or she, you know, needs insulin, how does that happen when they live in the mountains, you know, perhaps hours away from the closest city? So we spent a year kind of tackling that question and figuring out how we could make it work where we are. And again, working also with local people. And sure enough, this summer, we had a volunteer stay at our clinic for 2 months and begin working with our pilot, our first group of patients. And in January, we're going to introduce the next round of patients. But Andrew, to go back to your question, you know, we common diseases, you know, hypertension, I mentioned the diabetes. I mean, a lot of aches and pains of living tough lives in these communities. We're very fortunate because over the years, we've been able to introduce a lot of diagnostic capabilities in the clinic. So we have a pretty robust blood lab. We can do, I don't know, a couple dozen different tests on blood. And we have an EKG machine, ultrasound. So all of that, combined with the expertise that our providers bring, allows us to do a lot of, really good diagnostics right on site. And our pharmacy, you know, would rival, you know, my drugstore a few blocks away here. You know, we don't just have one antibiotic. We have, you know, several. We don't just have one of this. We have, you know, so our providers really have access to a full range of medications. And of course, our patients get all of that at no cost, you know, and they get enough to last until we come back the next time.
Can I ask about that? Sorry. I'm just curious about the no cost because, in my outreach program, we're really trying to figure out how we can make sure that people don't, this is going to come across really bad, but like don't feel entitled to the treatment or the medication, but feel almost like they have some skin in the game, right? Like they appreciate it, they'll take mm-hmm. it, they'll, you know, kind of what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. Sometimes charity can be mm-hmm. harmful to a community, too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that mm-hmm. something you guys encounter in this particular area?
You know, I think, I think of my own life and, you know, sure. I mean, any time, whatever the circumstances, you introduce, you know, giving something away, right? There's always going to be someone who's going to take advantage, right? Even in the midst of poverty that is beyond our ability to understand, you're always going to find the outliers who are going to look for ways to take advantage. But I've never for a moment thought that, if I think back over these 22 years that we have had problems with that, can I say definitively, you know, no one has walked out with their medications and maybe tried to sell them to provide food for their children? Maybe that's happened. But in any kind of a large scale way, no. Like I said, more than 80% of our folks come trip after trip, you know, we're maintaining them on their medicines. You combine what we know about them already with the fact that we are, you know, doing all these other diagnostic things. We know if the medicines are working, right? So, I hear what you're saying, Michelle, and I've met folks with lots of other really incredible organizations, and they have a different model, you know, where they do ask people to make some contribution, you know, even on a, you know, on a voluntary basis. But I don't know, from our start, that just wasn't the way that we did it. And it seems that what we're doing has worked for us for all these years.
If I can add a little bit my own very much an outsider perspective, I've only gone on 3 trips so far, but I feel like I've been in situations in the States where we've had certain communities that we're providing care for that were very underserved. And then I go to Guatemala and I go to Costa Rica, I go into all these other places and the Dominican. And there's definitely a different feel with the the type of care that's being provided. When you have someone like Marvin, who's our pediatric dentist this last trip, getting hugs from the moms of all the children that he was taking care of, when he's holding hands with the kids as he's walking them to and from the chair and getting them their toy and making it a really positive experience and getting to know them. When you have people like John, who's in the medical side, who's gone on I don't know how many trips where these people know who he is and he knows who they are. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a different type of connection with that type of setup than with the fast and furious, let's pump them in, pump them out, get them their meds, and then not really get to know them very well. That may or may not be the case in this situation, but that's kind of my outsider observation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, those personal connections are really important. And again, Andrew, you've heard me say, I start every week by reminding our volunteers that for Somos Amigos, it's not just what we do, but it's how we do it. And a part of that is making those connections with people. And if we end up spending a little bit longer with the patient, that's okay. You know, we want to engage. We want to know them. It makes for long days, and and we know, you know, we will never be able to see everybody. But we, you know, for that patient who's in front of us at that moment, that's all that's important to us. To provide the best care we can, the most complete care we can, and we strive to do it with humility and with compassion, and yeah, even with a sense of humor.
Do you mind briefly going over, so our listeners have listened this far in, they're like, hey, we want to go, but we don't really know what to expect. What does the week look like? Mm-hmm. Costs and things like that. Do you mind quickly going over that kind of stuff?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it is a week commitment. Our group meets on a Saturday of a week. And so Saturday is a travel day. Everybody's coming. Our groups typically have 30 to 35, maybe 36 or 38 volunteers. And they're typically coming from all over the U.S. and sometimes from Canada, the U.K. On this recent trip, we had a volunteer from Argentina. So Saturday is a day where everyone's gathering. Flights arrive, you know, all day and into the evening. We stay at a hotel near the airport in the city called Santiago, which is the second largest city in the country. On Monday morning, we get up, and now everyone has arrived, and so we do some introductions and some orientation, and then we get on buses and we head out to the community. So when we're up in the mountains where the clinic is located, we actually live in the community. We live in homes with people in the community, and that's an important way that we're different from a lot of other groups. But because we're so remote, there are no hotels or anything anywhere nearby, but it's also a part of who we are, you know, that we're there to share their lives with them in whatever modest way we can for those few days that we're there. So we arrive on Sunday, we do our unpacking and organizing in the clinic, get it all set up, and then we begin seeing patients on Monday morning. We see patients through Thursday afternoon, and on Thursday afternoon, we go back to the city, have a dinner together, and celebrate the week, and then on Friday, everybody heads home. So, it's a little bit more about the experience, and so what's nice is that in those groups of 30 to 38 or so volunteers, in a typical group, two-thirds of them have been before. So they're always returning volunteers who I think help make it a little more comfortable for the first-timers. But I think for a lot of first-timers, they end up looking back and saying, gosh, I was kind of nervous. I was kind of afraid, you know, what about the bugs? You know, what about this and that? But it's really a quite comfortable experience. Volunteers do live with families, but with other volunteers. So people are never alone in a strange environment. We have all of our meals together. We have a really closed system as far as food and water goes. And so it's not very often that someone, you know, gets sick from, I can't even remember when that's happened. So it's a pretty safe and comfortable experience. In terms of the cost, again, different models are out there. Different groups do things differently. But for us, Andrew, when you leave, you know, your work for a week, I mean, that's a big sacrifice, right? We never, from the start wanted to look to our volunteers to subsidize the work that we're doing. It would be easy for me to say, you know, you can come and have this great experience and I'm going to charge you a couple thousand dollars for it. And then I don't have to worry about how I'm going to pay for the composites and the amalgam and the fluoride varnish and all of that, because it's being subsidized by the fees I'm charging. So in our case, our volunteers pay what I think is a pretty reasonable fee. It's $300 that covers the direct expenses for the volunteers while we're down there, like transportation and food and that hotel that I mentioned. So that's what it costs, plus the airfare. So volunteers pay their own airfare. But then everything else that's in the clinic, all the supplies, all the medicines, it's all bought with funds that are donated to us by very generous individuals. But I do want to say one thing, though. If you look, you know, if I were to pull up our annual report and look at the list of volunteers and look at the list of donors, there's a lot of overlap. So our volunteers, you know, they really do go above and beyond, and they're incredibly generous in many, many ways.
So if someone is thinking about joining a trip, or even if they can't join a trip, but they want to make donations, how can they do that?
The easiest way is at our website, somosamigos.org. And now, having said that, depending on when folks are listening to this, our website is basically redoing it. And so the old one will go off and the new one will go on at some point in November. And so some of the functionality of the old site might not be ideal, but website's probably best. But otherwise, info@somosamigos gets anybody to me. That email address, info@somosamigos.org, and I'll get the email and, whether it's, volunteering with us or making a donation. We also have a Facebook page. We're on Facebook at Somos Amigos Medical Missions, and there you can see lots of photos from past trips and see posts from volunteers and also links to make donations as well.
And there's a way to link with Amazon. Is that correct?
Yeah, we love Amazon Smile. So if anyone is not familiar with that, who doesn't use Amazon today? We all use Amazon. Well, they have this really cool feature where organizations like ours, who are, small and we struggle, I'm the first to admit it. You know, we rely on the generosity of lots of folks, but imagine every time that you made a purchase on Amazon that, a little bit of what it costs you is donated to a nonprofit organization. That's what Amazon Smile does. You don't pay anymore as the consumer. And if you have Prime, you don't, none of those benefits change. The difference is they give a certain percentage of your cost, whatever you're buying, to the organization that you've identified. It's really, really easy to do. The first time you do it, you just go to smile.amazon.com, or you just Google Amazon Smile. And if you've never done it before, the first time it's going to say, oh, looks like you haven't been here. What organization do you want to support? And you just look for Somos Amigos Medical Missions. And then once you've done it that first time, it'll remember you when you go back. And if you just go to Amazon instead of Smile, it'll say, are you sure you want to be here, or do you want to be at Smile and support your organization? Yeah. So that's a really easy way, to support an organization like ours.
We love so much what you do. We're very grateful that we get to partner with you, and hopefully this will be a long-lasting thing. Is there any last messages or any other things that you'd like to say to our listeners?
You know, I have the real privilege, you know, my perspective in the clinic allows me to just walk around and, you know, just sort of take it all in. And especially when I go back to the dental clinic and I see what you guys do back there, I see how hard you're working. And, you know, Andrew, you were talking about the patients leaving and the moms hugging the dentist and the kids holding the hands of the dentist and whatever. I mean, you guys help people smile again, mm-hmm. you know, and it does remind me many times of how much I take for granted. You know, very few times in my life have I, knock on wood, have I had to go to the dentist because I have pain, or, you know, I get my teeth cleaned regularly. You know, a lot of our patients, you know, come with you know, really serious issues, and those folks back there just do amazing work, so I just, you know, I thank all of them, but we need volunteers, you know, and especially hygienists. We do, like I said, we like to have one or two on each trip, and we have four trips a year, so yeah, if anyone feels like this is something that they would enjoy doing, I'd please encourage you to get in touch with us.
Thanks, Frank. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, loved learning about Somos Amigos.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Andrew.
Like, what do you envision the population is going to look like?
Well, I think, like, no other than Latino. Like, I'm expecting it like Mexico. I know it's not Mexico, but... Right. Just, like, I've gone to where my parents are from, El Pueblo, so just, like, they're just very welcoming, very humble, and just hearing their stories, and they're just going to be happy to just have us, and I'm just going to be excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, I know you kind of heard a little bit what the clinic looks like, but, like, what are you expecting it to be different than what you have at home?
Well, I mean, I've worked in offices where it's not as prestigious, so, mm-hmm. I think just the basics. So having a chair, suction, I don't know, I can't picture a difference. So, well, I mean, I'm excited to see the clinic, so, but I can't picture or think of a difference, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, and hopefully it's pretty seamless.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, you know.
If it's functional, that's all that matters, right? If it's functional.
Yeah, it'll be functional.
But just hearing that there is a section for dentures, I thought that was kind of cool. Yeah. I would not be able to imagine that a mission trip has a dedicated denture lab or endodontic.
Think about how great that is for the populations, because how important is it to smile for getting a job, for your relationship with other people, whether it's truly they accept you more because you have a false tooth there, or you know, the appearance of a regular smile, or whether it's your own self-confidence because now you have a tooth there.
Exactly.
I mean, there's so many things that are awesome with a healthy smile, and dentures, I wish there were more denturists that would go on mission trips, because that's definitely a needed thing, or maybe even prosthodontists that could come and do that kind of stuff too. What did you think about all the people we had dinner with tonight?
First, I was intimidated because there was just mostly in the medical background. I'm just like, I can't keep up with you guys at first. Mm-hmm. But then just getting to know them better, I was able to relax. And they seem pretty fun and pretty awesome.
It's amazing how accomplished some of these people
are. Exactly, yeah.
I know. I feel the same way. You know, I'm just like, I don't... You know, they talked about Ed, the rocket scientist.
Yeah.
They talked about doing clinical trials on platelet research. And I'm like, you know, that's incredible.
But exactly.
How do you even get involved in something like that? Yeah, you have to be really good to get involved in something like that.
Like their minds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it also kind of goes to speak about, I guess, the level of dedication they have to their profession.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of frustrations that sometimes I see... I mean, I know you're, and I don't want to get you all discouraged, but some of the problems that I see with hygiene is this clock in, clock out. Like, they're only here to get a paycheck because it pays really well. They're not taking the time. And I know this isn't you because we've had extensive talks today about patient education and how much you care about your patients. But I do see that a lot. And it's kind of frustrating for me when you have these people who, because they were so invested and have done so many awesome things, like, we could do that too.
Exactly. So, yeah. And I feel like there's those hygienists like them in their center, in our profession, mm-hmm. that they strive outside of the, out of the box,
yeah.
who are, how do you say it, passionate, willing to, like, learn new, not learn new stuff, but just go out of the way, learn about the upcoming technologies, research, and stuff, so. Yeah.
All right, so this is the end of the second day that we met, first day at clinic. Maybe tell people what we did today.
So today we first went to the clinic, started setting up. The clinic actually was bigger than I thought. It's actually well equipped, very wide space. So I'm excited actually to try it out.
There's some people walking by. That's why the dogs are going crazy.
Definitely.
Good evening.
Hello. Be safe. Don't let a tarantula.
Oh my gosh, right?
And then after that, I had an orientation. Well, before that, we went to church and then orientation. And then after that, we went to go eat lunch. Pretty good. Can't you say lunch? Breakfast and dinner.
There are things that
I'm just
ate.
In my lunch.
He likes lunch. So we've had two meals here that Lourdes made for us.
Yeah.
The lunchtime one is one that has meat. I don't know if you noticed, but it's vegetarian at night.
No, I didn't notice.
Yeah. So it's all eggplant and beans
it was
and
way
rice.
Good.
And
yeah.
So good. Tell me what you think about Naranjito, like the place.
I actually kind of, in a way, feel at home. Well, just visiting where my grandparents were in Mexico, I kind of just get a sense of where my descent is. So I kind of feel at home.
Describe. It's a motorcycle going by. We're just standing right here next to the street in the middle of nowhere. It's awesome. Describe, I guess, for, like, remember, this is an audio podcast, so describe what it looks like.
So it's the same where I usually just stayed at my mom's side. So they live like exactly like this in a little rancho. All of her family, she comes from a big family. So she has more than 10 siblings. So everyone just lives in like this, like corner house. So
is there as many hills as this place is?
No, this is more steeper way. The view is just simply breathtaking. That really caught my eye. Coming from Utah, I love hiking, so that just really made my day.
Did you feel like we didn't prepare you well enough about the hiking?
No, I actually love the hiking. Okay. It didn't defeat me.
It's because it's really steep.
Yeah.
And like we've had, like I told you before on the way up, you know, we had a candidate that said, hey, I have a kind of a bum knee. Can I still come? And we're like, you can, but I don't know if you should.
The only thing I'm worried about is going to clinic all sweaty and sticky. Now I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, well. It'll be gross. And
but it'll be fun.
Sweaty and nasty.
With the humidity, I don't mind it. It's pretty cool.
And then like just listening. It's so quiet.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear dogs, you hear roosters and things like that. So okay. So end of day one, it was pretty much just setting up the clinic, orientation. You have a 30K Cavatron unit, so that won't be too different. You brought your Newbird mouth mirror suction, so we're going to assemble that tomorrow and figure out how we can get that working. We'll probably do a video or something with that tomorrow as well.
Just play in the high suction and you're set to go.
I mean, it really is plug and play.
All good. But then I just have to be kind of selective on using it since we only have, four?
So
heavy calc, just for heavy calc.
Yeah, no, and it'll be fine. We'll get those things turned over pretty quickly, I think. We have Dave. Dave's here again. Shout out to Dave. He's our sterilizer. He's been here the other two times I was here. So, I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah.
You ready to get some sleep, though?
Yeah. Okay. Excited, but nervous for tomorrow, but more excited.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. We'll check in tomorrow.
All right. I can say this trip, I for sure, something just reignited and I know I'm going to go back to my practice and like a new forefront. So I'm pretty excited on that.
If you guys want to hear more about our trip with Adolfo, please tune into the bonus episode that will be released later on this week.
Well, I really enjoyed hearing about your trip. I felt like I was there with you. So thanks for doing that. And we hope everybody enjoyed this week's episode. As usual, we encourage you to find us on Instagram, like our page, interact with us there, direct message me, share our story, share our page, whatever you want to do, do it all. Love it. And then also you can find us on Facebook at A Tale of Two Hygienists. You can also go to our website, ataleoftwohygienists.com. And you're welcome to send us a message there with the contact form, or you can send us a message at ataleoftwohygienists@gmail.com. So thanks again for taking the time this week. Anything else, Andrew?
No, I think that's it. I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot. Bye, everyone.
Bye, y'all.
I wanted to tell you about my problem with Instagram.
Wait, your problem with your with ability to use Instagram, or Instagram as an app and social media platform?
Let me figure out how to use this real quick. The problem with social media in general. Okay. So these are the things that I keep getting. I don't know if you can see this.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Keep getting women in thongs requesting. And I'm like, well... And then also dudes with shirts off. So what am I doing wrong?